history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this amazing country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some stories out there that need to be told, and we'll never know unless we take a little time to ask some questions and listen. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And as we go down that road, we sure do learn a lot. We're educated, we're entertained, and so often inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. Every once in a while, we are fortunate enough to meet a centenarian, someone who has reached that age of 100. Not easy to do, and we want to know their secrets. So we'll get to that today with Leonard Francis of Bakersfield, California, where folks listen to Hometown Heroes just about every night of the week on KNZR. I've got to ask you, Mr. Francis, 100 years, and almost all of those here in Kern County, you must like it around here.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't want to be anywhere else.
But you were born in Tulare County, north of here, up in a place called Porterville. Your family moved here when you were how old?
1 year.
And a lot of people might say, as a figure of speech, you know, I grew out in a weed patch. But you actually grew up in Weed Patch. There's actually a place on the map called Weed Patch. Where is that?
Oh, that's out southeast of Bakersfield, about 15 miles.
Did you ever hear any snide remarks or comments when you told people you were from Weed Patch?
Always.
Did you come up with any good comebacks for that?
No, I never had one.
Well, what was life like out there in Weed Patch as you're growing up in the 1920s and 30s?
Well, it was great. It was good to grow up on a farm. We didn't have much, but whatever we had, we made ourselves, all our toys. It was just great growing up out there in the farm and have the horses and milk the cows and all everything that goes with farming.
Did you have a big family? Did you have a lot of siblings?
Eight. There was eight in our family. But I was the youngest one, so a couple of the older boys, they were almost married. I was 22 years younger than my oldest brother, so they were just about gone when I come along.
Well, yeah, you were telling me your father was born in 1865, right at the end of the Civil War. That's quite a connection, and now here you are 100 years old. You mentioned the jobs you had to do around the farm and milking the cows and all of that. What was the toughest chore or job or duty you had on the farm?
Picking cotton. Well, I hate to pick cotton, but I'd pick enough to fill my sack a little bit and then sleep on it until my dad find me. Made me start picking again.
Uh-huh. And most people who listening have never had to pick cotton before. Was it the labor part of it? Was it the time of year you have to do it where it's really hot out there? Or what was the worst part of that?
Well, it was just your hands. You picked those bowls and they were sticky on the end. You know, they were sharp when you pulled it out. So you really made your fingers sore. Yeah, that was the worst part about picking cotton. It was just hard labor, you know, just pulling that sack through the rows.
Well, I bet then you found some ways to escape the farm a little bit. Maybe sports was a good way to do that?
It sure was, yeah. We started playing softball out there. And in those days, softball was big because you didn't have TV, you didn't have anything else. So softball become real big in the 30s and the 40s and the 50s. Softball was big. So that's what our outlet was, to have fun, you know. Yeah. We started young and just grew up playing ball.
And I want to talk to you more about that, but I realize there's a couple other things I have to ask you about chronologically. And maybe I should ask you this. Did you have a dream or an ambition when you were that kid, 10, 11, 12 years old? Did you have this thought, hey, when I grow up and get off this farm, this is what I'm going to do?
Well, yes, I did. But, you know, we didn't have any money to do anything. So we just kind of let things go. And, we just didn't have the advantage that the kids have nowadays, you know, and to be scouted or anything like that.
Were you thinking you could have been a Major League Baseball player?
Well, I thought so. And quite a few people around here thought so. But I never did.
Well, we'll talk some more about that. But what happened in 1930 out on the farm?
Our house burned down, and we were all out on the farm, and I seen the smoke coming up, and I told my dad, I said, you know, there looks like a smoke coming out of the house. And he looked up, and he says, no, he says, that's on the other side. And pretty quick, the big flames flew up, and I said, no, our house is burning down. And so we all tried to go to the house, and of course, you know, there was no fire departments or nothing like that out there in the country. So by the time we got there, it was gone. It was just practically all burnt down. And it was a great big old two-story house, too. It was big. We had nothing but what we were rearing. But nothing come out of there except my dad come over here, and he had a trunk when he come over to this country. He had a trunk. And the girl across the street, she pulled that trunk out of there. I still have the trunk right to this day. It had a bunch of letters in there and didn't have much anything important except some clothes and letters and stuff. But anyway, I was looking at those letters, and they were from England. They're beautiful. They were from his sister and brothers. And the handwriting's so pretty, I can't read it.
So are you saying that trunk is the only thing that survived the fire?
The only thing come out of that house was that trunk.
Well, I've got to ask you, though. I mean, your whole life has been out on this farm, and in many ways, I'm sure your whole life was in that house. How devastating was that to see that just disappear like that?
Well, being young like that, I didn't realize how bad this was going to affect us. But I look back now, and I can see what it did to my father and mother. It's just awful for them. And I didn't realize it at the time. You know, as being a kid, well, we lost everything, and that's it, you know. But it was a sad time for us. And it really set my dad back, because it was during the Depression, and eventually he lost the farm to boot. That's why in school, I actually did not, and not everybody knows this. This is something for you. Actually, I never finished school, high school. I got to the, within about 3 months, I guess. And then I went to work to help my folks. I left out of school because they were having a real hard time.
Well, that must have been hard for you. And this is that Depression era. And maybe we should spend some time on that, because most of the people alive today did not live through the Great Depression. And we think it's a hardship when our cell phone runs out of battery or our credit card gets lost. You know, what was the worst of it that you experienced? What were the things that you look back on now and say, boy, that was really severe?
Well, it's just looking back is how bad it was for my mother and father to go through this. But the people out in the country at that time were great. They all got together. They even got a car for us, got clothes. They just pulled us through at that time, you know, the people out there in the country.
Your neighbors, other farmers around there?
Farmers and neighbors there.
Well, that's neat. That's encouraging for us to hear today that happened. And what about having enough to eat and having clothes to wear? I mean, during the Depression, did you ever notice that things were different or tougher?
You know what? We raised most everything. My mother always had a big garden. And we had chickens and turkeys and ducks and cows. So we just about raised everything we used, you know, for food. That's just about the way it was at that time. Everybody did the same thing, you know.
Is that your secret to being so strong and sharp at 100 years old, that you were drinking that cream off the top straight from the cow when it was still hot?
Yeah, the people worry about having too much butter and cream and sugar and all that. We never even thought about that. That's all we had was that old thick cream. I remember my mother used to scrape it off the kettle with a fork or knife. Man, we thought that was good. That was pretty good with our cereal.
Oh, yeah. Nice and rich.
And we made our own butter. So we used all the butter we wanted, you know. And nowadays, they don't want you to have all that fat and all that. Well, we never even thought about it.
And you're 100 years old. You look like you're in better shape than I am, so I'm not going to shake a stick at it. Did you guys have refrigeration or electricity, indoor plumbing, all those things?
Well, we did have electricity, and I think that was probably what caused the house to burn down. You know, the wiring wasn't too good in those days. And I think that's what caused the house to burn down. But yeah, we had electricity.
And you mentioned having to quit school to go to work to help support the family, yes, pay the bills. I'm guessing that was hard because you probably played a few sports at what's now Bakersfield High School, home of the Drillers.
Well, I had to ride the bus. We're about 16 miles away from town, and so we rode buses. So I didn't get to play football, which I really love football and baseball. But I did do track because we could do that during the school hours, you know. But all the other sports were after school, and I had to ride the bus. So I never got to play baseball or anything in high school. And I wished I had, but I didn't.
So how'd you figure out how good you were in baseball? And which position did you play?
We just played all over the country, you know, out there in the country. And we had country teams. I guess I started so young that I got pretty good. Then I had a brother that was just a little older than I was. And we would practice against the old barn. We would get about, 15, 16 yards away from each other and throw that ball as hard as we could. And it bounced against the barn, so we didn't have to go pick it up very far. And anyway, that's the way we learned to really bat. We got pretty good at batting because we got a whole hard sponge ball or a tennis ball and just stood pretty close to each other and threw it hard as we could. And we got pretty good at hitting. In fact, I was the leading hitter in that tournament when we played in the World Softball Tournament. I had 438 was what I batted in the tournament.
And what position did you play?
I played in the outfield, all three places. But in 1950, when I was playing with the Hulk Packers, our first baseman got hurt. So they put me over there on first base, and I wasn't the first baseman, but they put me there. That's where I played so good.
It's hard for us younger folks to understand this, but you guys didn't have Major League Baseball on the West Coast back then. So did you have any baseball heroes or someone you read about or heard about that you kind of looked up to or admired?
Always looked up to Joe DiMaggio. He was playing with the San Francisco Seals, and then, of course, he went up to the Major Leagues. Of course, Bob Feller, I looked up to him quite a bit. Of course, Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig, all those old-timers, you know.
Yeah.
And that's why I was a Yankee fan, on account of Joe DiMaggio and Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig. I looked up to them so much.
Well, and you might have played against Joe DiMaggio in the Pacific Coast League when he was with the Seals because you had a tryout with the Hollywood Stars. How did that come about?
Well, there was three of us kids here. We got a chance to go down there to Hollywood and try out. And so they had us play and then to find out our different talents. And I was the only one of the three of us that made the team. And I was in center field. I did real good, but two other kids, we didn't have any money. And they wanted to come home. And like a crazy fool, I come home with them. And that ended my career trying it out for baseball.
Have you ever wondered about that? What would have happened?
Yeah, other people have too, and they wondered, well, what would have happened if you'd have stayed down there with them? But it didn't work out that way. We didn't think, you know, at that time, you don't think when you're a young kid, you know. We were probably 17, 18 years old. So it just didn't turn out right.
Yeah, because who knows? I mean, this was before World War II. Yeah. You might have been discovered. You might have been in the big leagues a few years from then.
Everybody thought so. Everybody around here after we played later on in the 40s around here. And I've had a lot of people tell me I was the best player they'd ever seen here in Bakersfield. So I don't know. We had a lot of good players here. You know, it just didn't turn out right for me.
You already told me you're a good hitter. I'm guessing you must have been pretty fast, too.
Yeah, I could run. That's what I did in track. I ran the 100, the 220. So I could run, yes.
This area, this whole San Joaquin Valley, has a pretty rich legacy when it comes to track and field stars. There's some Olympic gold medalists that have come from around here, and the greatest pole vaulter ever, Dutch Warmerdam. Did you ever run into people that went on to do great things in track?
Not really, because stayed pretty close to home here. I got married in 41, so I just stayed pretty close to home and didn't really get out.
Well, maybe that's why you turned down the Hollywood Stars, because you had to come back here and meet someone who was going to be the star of your life for 76 years. How did you meet Mary Catherine?
It was funny. We had an old skating rink, a roller skating rink, and I couldn't skate, but we come in, the kids, there was three of us boys come in from out the country in Weed Patch.
What do you mean you couldn't skate? You just told me you're the best baseball player Kern County's ever had. You couldn't skate.
Anyway, we come in to go to that roller rink. So I was trying to get around that rink, and I fell down. And this girl come by, and she picked up my hand and helped me get up. That was my wife later on. That's how I met my wife, was at the roller rink when she picked me up. And she picked me up forever after that.
Well, I guess it's a real good thing you couldn't skate then.
Yeah, it sure was. So she was still in high school at the time. I was just out. Anyway, we started going together, and we went together 4 years before we were married. So we got married in 1941.
And, of course, everyone knows that World War II started for America in 1941, but it was going earlier than that in Europe. And I'm thinking about what you shared about your father coming here from England. Did you guys have relatives that were still in England? Did you hear about the war before it came to America?
Not really, because we didn't have any communication over there with them too much.
Well, I guess that makes you a real minority in Bakersfield, right? Because I think everyone that's 80 or older in Bakersfield came from Oklahoma. That's what I heard.
Well, you're right, because we were out there in the Wheat Patch area, and that's where they all come to. Jackrabbit Camp, we call them Jackrabbit Camp. Anyway, they come out there and on our farm. These people come out here, and under the cottonwood trees, they pitched a tent or something, and they were everywhere out there. And so we were surrounded by the Okies. We called them Okies all the time.
Yeah.
Okies and Arkies.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, they had to flee that Dust Bowl and go somewhere, and they came here, and a lot of them have stuck, and you've stuck around here. And I'm curious, so you talk about meeting Mary Catherine and marrying her in 1941. Did it ever occur to you that war might be imminent for the U.S., that this might be something that could happen?
Yes, it was, because, you had kind of heard a little bit in the news, and everything going on over in Europe at the time. We were pretty sure that we were going to, of course, they had the draft on at that time. So we pretty well knew that we were going to be drafted sooner or later. But they did take me because I was working in the oil fields at the time, and they need oil. So the oil workers got delayed, and I was married, and that helped. But they finally caught me.
And we'll hear more about that when we come back. 100-year-old Leonard Francis is our guest today. I think you're going to get a kick out of the nickname his fellow sailors gave him in boot camp. We're going to hear what it was like to ride out a typhoon in the Pacific and the unique way the men of his destroyer celebrated news of the Japanese surrender. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.